A fascinating biology inside the world of snakes today in the Upper Cumberland. Tennessee is home to 35 different types of snakes. Four of those are venomous. Only two are found in the Upper Cumberland. Over the last several weeks, we've tried to bring you some insight. They are fascinating creatures with some unique talents, according to Tennessee Tech biologist Dr. Richard Perkle. Richard Perkle, thank you for being with us.
Hey, glad to be here.
Why are snakes given the reputation that they have?
Honestly, there's a whole bunch of theories behind that. But I think one of them, obviously the biblical story of a snake being, out there and being part of the biblical the starting story. The other thing I think that's important is that you look at it and it's like they sort of look creepy. I mean, how do they move without legs? That kind of thing. So just sort of mythical in that sense. And they've been used in other stories and stuff as sort of an evil thing. But honestly, I always joke and tell people snakes are friends and, that they really
are.
Yeah,
and I'm sure you get that look, right?
Yes, always, yeah. But they're an important part of the ecosystem. And so I don't recommend people jump out and try to hug one, but I do think that they do get a horrible rap.
Let's talk about some basics. How do they move without legs?
They have an amazing skeletal system. So basically just imagine just tons and tons and tons of ribs with lots of little muscles attached to them that allow them to contract and move the skeletal, their backbones in different ways. And they're able to grab onto stuff with their scales that allows them to sort of get traction and move along. Many of the snakes that we have in this area can climb extremely well. Green snakes can get up in trees really easily. The one everybody calls a chicken snake, a gray rat snake, that one I've seen it climb up a brick wall, literally just straight up a brick wall. So they're insanely good at grasping things, and those minor movements of the muscles are able to allow it to move. So it's really neat.
That ability to move that way, though, you would think that it's a really slow process,
yeah.
And yet we've probably all seen snakes that can move quickly.
Yeah, they can move pretty quick. Yeah, so they're able to. It varies depending on the substrate that they're able to grab on, the size of the snake, the muscles associated with that, and how quickly they can twitch. And so, really, it's just a matter of speed, how fast they can twitch back and forth, that it can get the traction and move them along. So, yeah, some of them can. Racers are a good example. Black racers can move fairly quickly, and but they're still limited by the ground, the surface that they're on, things like that.
If I remember correctly from elementary school, cold-blooded?
Yeah, we don't try not to use that term anymore because it sort of gives the idea. We're out of date on that one. Well, it's the idea is that it's not really cold in the sense, it's the temperature of the air. So, it's never that cold here, really. And so, they're ectothermic. They rely on the temperature. And so that's why a lot of times you see, snakes on rocks and in the road. They had a meal. They're wanting to rest and digest, so they're sitting out trying to get some heat to help their metabolism go up so that they can digest that food more quickly.
You mentioned one of the parts that I think most of us have been fascinated with at one point or another, and that is how they digest food. That's another thing they've been uniquely equipped to do.
Yeah, they're pretty impressive watching them eat. So we do have a collection at Tennessee Tech, and when we feed them, watching them they don't have hands to manipulate their food, so they have to they're able to turn the food to get it to where it's oriented, then slowly but surely, because their jaws can unhinge, use that to slowly manipulate and pull the food into their mouth. And then it stays in their stomach and digests fairly slowly over a period of time. Depends on the size, what they ate, the size of it, that kind of thing, how long it'll stay in their stomach. Snakes don't really have to eat every single day. And so they can get by on a meal here and there and sort of opportunistic in what they when they feed and what they feed on.
And I guess one of the big things, mice, rats.
Yeah, around here a lot of that. But they do eat insects when they're small. They eat lots of insects. They'll eat toads and frogs, depending on the species. Some of them are specialty snakes, like the queen snakes. They eat crawfish. That's it. That's the only thing they eat. And so, they have some specialized things here and there. But other than that.
How do they reproduce?
Some of them lay eggs, and others they'll have live births, and so that's it varies depending on the particular species. They mate in various different times. Some of them can mate any time, but they tend to mate more in the spring or more in the summer, and it depends on the species. But the males and females will get together. They sometimes these large balls, like that's real common in rattlesnakes we don't have around here. They'll get these huge balls. It's really cool. We always show students a picture of those balls because it's like, whoa, that's a lot of snakes in one spot. And they mate, and then they'll either lay eggs or things. Sometimes they have like limited maternal care. The timber rattlesnakes we have around here, they will like keep with their young for basically until the first shed, and then they just sort of disperse and they run off, and that's a couple weeks. But most of the time, it's like, good luck, have fun, see what happens.
Richard Perkel is our guest. He talked about shedding. We'll talk about that as we continue, as we give you a little insight into snakes. He's a biologist at Tennessee Tech. Tennessee Tech biology professor Richard Perkel is our guest. So the whole shedding thing, how often do all snakes shed?
Yes, all snakes will shed. That's the only way they're able to grow in length. And so they'll shed. The amount of times they shed is dependent on how much nutrition they've got. Think just like us, you know, you grow when you're eating. And so if they eat well, they'll shed more often. When they're younger, they tend to shed more often because they're growing more rapidly. As they get older, they don't. The shed itself actually goes over their eye scales. And so one of the things that you notice, especially snakes in captivity, you'll be able to see their eyes are sort of grayed over. And it's where that scale that's laying over the top of the eyes sort of popped loose. And so it makes it difficult for them to see. And those are the times when you're more likely, when you're trying to handle a snake, for them to get bit. Because just like us, if we had our eyes sort of like shaded over and somebody came out and grabbed us, our instinct is to sort of strike out, hey, what's going on, that kind of deal. And that's what they're doing. It really depends a lot. It's fun to watch them shed, and the sheds can be really interesting. So when people always ask, like, can you tell a venomous snake from a non-venomous snake? And the sheds are actually, in this, at least in Tennessee, is one of the better ways.
Really?
If you look at the very tail end of the shed, you can find the vent, which is where their fecal material comes out. And then the scales beneath that, if it's a single row of scales, then it's a venomous snake. If it's offset double cell, scales, then it's a non-venomous snake. And so that's, you know, you can handle those. You don't have to worry about, like, you know, the skin's not going to bite you. So you're able to say, okay, was there a venomous snake here? Or not?
But I've also known people who say, now, if there's a skin somewhere, that means there's a snake not too far away. So
I think people would be surprised at how often there's not a snake not that far away. Like if you're out in the woods or you're even at home, I mean, in your gardens, oftentimes there's small snakes that like to burrow underneath the leaf litter, and you just never see them.
You're the third of three guests who have said the exact same thing, that if we only knew how many snakes are around us, and if we really are that freaked out about snakes, you would spend your life freaked out.
Yeah, but I think, you know, they're very cryptic. A lot of them are. You know, even the bright colored ones, sometimes you can't see them because they know how to like hide in the location that they hide in. And even people with great search images, like I know what a snake looks like when I'm out in the field, like looking for snakes. Even I like will have a hard time. We had a biologist that worked with us for a while that studied rattlesnakes, and they actually put tags in them to where they knew where the snake would be by, you know, tracking them. And so they're out doing telemetry to find the snake, and they literally walked past it back and forth four times before either one of them saw it. There's two people there trying to find it. And so they knew it was there, were looking for it, and still couldn't see it. And so.
So does that tell us that they truly don't want to interact with us?
No, yeah, absolutely not. Like, venom's expensive. That's one. I always tell people that. Like, think about it as it being expensive for the snake to make and for them to use. It's meant to help them with their prey items. Like, that's what it's for. And so they don't really want to use it on you if they don't have to. And so most of the time, people that get bitten by snakes are usually ones that were, you know, messing with them. You know, they very rarely, you step on one or something on accident, it might bite you in response. But copperheads are the ones that most people around here you might step on it because they're kind of found in the most places. And they often dry bite anyways. They don't inject the venom when they bite. And their venom's really, like, not that toxic. I think one person in the history of Tennessee has ever died from a copperhead bite. They were very allergic, and so had a drastic allergic reaction, died from that. So we just don't tend to see it in the area.
Richard Perkel is our guest. What about the tongue?
Oh, yeah, the little split tongue's pretty neat. So, yeah, I think that's one of the, you know, it's classic cartoon thing. They always have the tongue making the little slithery sounds and stuff, and so it's a really interesting organ that helps with their olfaction, their ability to sense their environment. Again, we use our fingers a lot to tell what's going on in our environment. And And so they don't have that ability. And so they're testing for the odors and different things in order to know where to go. And so their tongue has the ability to sort of, it's flicking really to help pull those little odorant molecules that are in the air, pull them toward them so they can detect them. It's really neat. Like it's you know, a lot of times it's when we have snakes and kids holding it, it's like, oh, it licked me. It's like, it's not licking you. It's sort of it's smelling you more than anything. And so that kind of deal.
What's the thing about snakes, the curiosity, the question maybe that you have that you haven't had answered or you just find fascinating?
Yeah. I think their physiology is really interesting. And there are some snakes that we just don't know. We don't know how the snake breeds. We don't know, you know, a good way to find the snake on a regular basis. We, you know, that kind of thing. And I think that stuff, like the unknown parts that we're, where it's, you know, if you go find a book and you're reading and they're like, we don't know anything about this. I'm like, ooh, I want to know about that. Like, so it's really just, I think physiology is fascinating anyways. And snakes really do have a really neat physiology. Like you said, I mean, how do they move? Like, how do they other stuff? So I think that's, to me, is the unknown stuff. So,
what's the lifespan of a snake?
In captivity, they can live a long time because they can get steady meals and it doesn't matter that their vision starts to go out. But depending on the species, you know, 8 to 10 years is sometimes what we consider like a long time. Some of them can live longer than that. It's really just, can they get food when they get big enough? Got to think about it. When they get bigger, their prey items have to get larger. And so being able to happen upon those or find those might be more difficult. And so, but yeah, it depends on the species a lot. So,
when you go to a zoo or some other facility that has snakes and you stand and watch them, and I think over the years that I've seen them, they're not doing anything. They're just laying there.
That's what they do.
Really?
Yeah. I think a lot of times people think like, oh, it's so bad because they're in captivity. They're just laying there. It's like, look, they're getting a square meal once a week at least. You know, they're sort of hanging out. That's what they would normally do, just sort of get in a spot and sit.
So and a snake in the wild is
oftentimes
not
just sort of
move.
Staying put. Like they'll move around in order to find prey or to get to thermoregulate. If there's a threat, they'll move away from the threats. Most snakes really do want to move away from threatening things. They typically will go away from you. Even the ones that people say like, oh, it came right at me. Water snakes are the classic example of that. Like a lot of people, oh, that water snake came right for me. It's like, they've done a lot of studies with that and you scare a water snake, it picks a random direction and just runs in that direction. Well, sometimes you're the random direction, right? And so running straight at you, it's not intentional. It's not meant to be, you know, I'm going to come in, I'll eat you now, but it's not kind of thing. But
Richard Perkel is our guest. He's a biologist at Tennessee Tech as we talk about snakes. Tennessee Tech biologist Richard Perkel is our guest. Okay, we've talked about, you know, copperheads, and we have, is it timber rattlesnakes
timber
that we
rattlesnakes
have here?
Yes.
In the upper Cumberland, but much more non-venomous snakes, right?
Oh, yeah, way more. There's only 4 species of venomous snakes that are found in Tennessee. The pygmy rattlesnake, the only place you're going to find it is between land between the lakes. Water moccasin or the cottonmouth is found primarily in western Tennessee. Lowlands, swamps, that kind of thing. Many people will say, oh, I saw one, you know, over here, and like pick a pond in somebody's yard. And it's unlikely that's what it, yeah, okay, someone could have gone fishing over in West Tennessee. It very well could have got on somebody's boat and rode all the way back over and then got out in your pond. But it's more likely that it's a non-venomous snake, one of the water snakes or something like that. And most snakes can swim. So if just because it's in the water doesn't automatically mean it's a water snake. And definitely not a water moccasin. And then we have the copperhead and the timber rattler. Those are really it as far. And every other snake that we have are non-venomous snakes. We have king snakes and black king snakes. See, I'm trying to think of some of the ones that we have in our collection. Corn snakes, which are typically more southern, but still like still in middle and east Tennessee. Those are the classic red snakes that, you know, the ones that you, a lot of times you see versions of those that are in pet stores. Garter snakes, Decay's brown snake, it's a really common snake for people to find in their little gardens and that kind of thing. So, yeah, there's a ton. Ringneck snakes are cute little snakes with like a little ring around their neck. Those are the ones I've always told people, pick one up. It's pretty neat. And it'll, when you hold them, their tail is sort of corkscrews, like to try to show their underside that's sort of lighter colored. So, it's pretty neat. The hognose snake is, eastern hognose snake is one of my favorite snakes. And it typically in sandier soils or looser soils because it digs. It literally has sort of a pig snout, and it uses it to dig into the sediment. They only eat frogs and toads, or toads, I think, primarily. And so they stick, you know, have to think about what happens when you bite a toad. The toad's going to, like, you know, inflate itself or whatever. So it has these rear-facing fangs that will actually stab into the toad and has a paralytic agent that comes out and keeps them from doing that. But the coolest thing about the hognose snakes is when you startle one. So when you startle it, it's going to make itself look like a venomous snake. It flattens its head wide, and it starts hissing, and it'll, you know, sometimes even shake its tail, just trying to act as terrifying as humanly possible, or snakely possible, I guess. But, like, so it's trying to, like, you know, get that. And you just keep messing with it. It will eventually be like, nope, I'm going to play dead, and just rolls over and plays dead. And you can, like, at that point, you can just keep turning it over. It'll keep rolling itself back over. It's like, no, I'm dead. I'm dead. I'm dead. And so it's sort of an interesting thing. I have a hard time not, every time I see one of those, I have a hard time not messing with it. I'm like, oh, I want to see it play dead. So you shouldn't. It's not, you know, obviously it's stressful for the snake, but kind of want to see it again, kind of deal.
You mentioned fangs. Do all snakes have fangs?
No, fangs are a specialized structure that inject venom. All of them have teeth. And so the teeth can vary, and it's just like you think little spiky teeth around the edges of their mouth or things like that. Larger, sharper teeth sometimes and bite kind of thing. So I've been bitten by several different snakes. And sometimes it feels like somebody hit you really hard with Velcro, and other times it feels like somebody stabbed you with hypodermic needles. So, but otherwise it's like, okay, wasn't the greatest thing.
In the United States, I guess we think of the Southwest as where there are the most venomous snakes.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. That's at least the ones that are most likely to people to encounter and people to have like injuries from them. Yeah.
And mostly rattlesnake?
Yeah, usually the diamondback rattlesnake is probably the one in the United States that should be feared the most. It's you can find it in the Southeast, like as well, southern portions of Georgia. And things like that. It's rattlesnakes are nasty snakes. Like they're definitely, you know, their venom is really bad, and it can cause lots of issues. And you definitely don't want to mess with a rattlesnake in general. I've seen them at Standing Stone. I've seen them. I was up on Brotherton Mountain riding my bicycle, and I saw one in the road that had died and gotten hit by a car. And so they're a lot of different places. But most of the time, you know, leave them alone. They're going to be fine. I think the only time I've ever messed with one in the wild, it was over in the Smoky Mountains, and it was on a trail, and I didn't want somebody else coming along and killing it, because that's usually what winds up happening. Somebody sees it, and they're like, oh, yeah, I kill this rattlesnake. And it's like, oh, come on, man, get out of the trail. And so I took a long stick. Basically, if you can estimate the length of their body, and that's they can lunge about half the length of their body. So I got a stick that was as long or slightly longer than the length of the body, because I know he can't lunge that far. And then I used that to get him off the trail.
Okay, so if we talk around the world, mm-hmm. and we know that there are some very venomous snakes,
yeah.
there are some very dangerous snakes that live in other places of the world, which ones of those interest you?
I think the stories of the Black Mamba, I think sort of interesting. I think those are, you know, terrifying looking snakes too. I mean, they look scary. And so I think that's kind of neat. There's some of the stories where pythons have eaten people and that kind of thing. I don't think there's a lot of evidence that the pythons, like, you know, curled up like in bed and, like, you know, wrapped somebody up and killed them all that often. But sometimes, you know, they've found people in pythons. So those are kind of cool stories. But, you know, they're not common. I got to go to Peru and we saw an anaconda there, and it was really neat to see wild anaconda.
So, and is that the largest snake?
Big one. Yeah, it's one of the bigger ones. I'm not sure if the one that we saw was this particular anaconda species that's the largest one, but it was a really, really, really big snake. And so easily weighed, you know, 100, 110 pounds. And so they were keeping it in the people would charge you like $2, and these people are doing anything they can to make money. Never charging like money to see it. And so when they opened the thing, it was a female and it had babies. And so there's all these little baby ones like going around everywhere. They'd also thrown a sloth in there for it to eat. And so the sloth was crawling out, and it was the students were all like, oh my gosh. And so it was a really interesting 20 minutes.
It sounds like a turn of the century
yeah.
old fair exhibit.
Yeah, it was definitely different
in the old days. I guess the good news is, though, that if you don't like snakes, the most dangerous snakes don't live around.
Yeah, that's right? True. Yeah. So if you and it's funny because my wife really, I mean, absolutely hates snakes, but she's grown more accustomed to them because it's like I'll be like, hey, I'm gonna like go to this do the snake show at the school or whatever, and so she's sort of around. She says as long as they don't come home with me, she's fine. But she can be in the same room with them now and it not be a big deal. And I think it comes down to education. Like she knows, like, hey, they're around. You've seen there's been a lot more around you than you know, and you know that kind of thing. She does make me clean out the flower beds after she found a snake while she was cleaning flower beds out. So that's, I'm stuck with that now.
Richard Perkle is our guest. He's a biologist at Tennessee Tech. So Richard Perkle, what do you want people in the Upper Cumberland to know about snakes? What's the message? I would imagine one of those, based on something you said a moment ago, is don't just automatically kill them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people are so nervous about them. Like, oh, they're going to attack me. They're going to attack my animals. They're going to attack this, attack that. And they're just not likely to do that. They tend to eat rodents. I've farmers or people that have like large, like gardens, having snakes around are a good thing. They keep the rodent population down. So they're really important as part of a normal sort of apex predator kind of deal. They typically are very skittish around humans. They don't like humans. Most of them, see humans as something that, hey, this could hurt me really badly. And so they're going to try to like get away. If you try to grab one, it's going to bite you. So don't try to grab one. That's usually the message that I try to get across to people is like, if you're scared of snakes, don't grab one. And, they're definitely going to like move away from you.
In terms of just protecting yourself.
Yeah.
The thing I've always heard, especially in the summertime, is, be careful when you walk out at night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that true?
That's a good point. If you're inclined to, walk around and, especially places where it's likely to see snakes. So like, around the edges of the river, the snakes will be up on the river bank during that time, like in the evenings, the flipping over rocks and logs, that's a good time that people bump into them. Cleaning out your garden, things like that. So there's times where it's like, just be aware that you're in their environment too. And so that, and then not to freak out. I think that's the first thing people usually do is they scream and run and then, immediately it's a copperhead. And so I would love for people to learn. That's one thing I would like is for people to learn the difference between the venomous snakes and the other ones. They're easy to recognize as venomous snakes. And so that you don't tend to want to, it's funny because you can get on Facebook and see all the things. Everything's a copperhead. Everything's a water moccasin. And so it's like, oh, come on.
But I'm sure what people are saying right now is, Richard, I'm not getting close enough.
Yeah, it's true.
To figure out what it is.
Yeah, yeah. I know it's funny because a lot of the ways that you do it are you can look at the slits in there. Because all we have are pit vipers, and pit vipers all have slitted eyes. And people, I don't want to get close enough to see it. But if you've seen one, like if you go to the zoos, like Nashville Zoo has a great exhibit. The Memphis Zoo has a wonderful exhibit. Knoxville has a wonderful exhibit. Like they, and you see one. Once you see it, like you're like, okay, I know what that looks like. And you don't have to get that close to see that part. And yeah, the triangular head sort of works. But like I said, with the hognose, a lot of snakes can flatten their heads and will do that. Water snakes do that. And so they'll flatten their head out. I like being able to, like, if somebody's ever seen a water moccasin, they never call anything else a water moccasin because they're so heavy body. I mean, they're big, like heavy looking snakes. And so you don't look at another snake and ask a water moccasin. It's like, nah. But so I think educating yourself, like seeing things, there's all these apps on you can take pictures now and like search the internet, so it's like, there's things that are ways to do that without like immediately thinking, I got to kill this snake. I understand if you have a venomous snake under your house, you don't want that. Like, that's I get that. But if it's out in the woods, like behind your house or somewhere else, it's not going to hang out there long. It's going to move on.
Because as we know, there's probably a lot more that you've never seen, right?
Yeah.
They've lived there. You've cohabitated and
all the time you never knew they were there.
Yeah. So. Richard Perkle, biologist at Tennessee Tech. Thanks for educating us today.
Yeah, glad to do it.